Today's program has been brought to you by Hearst Ranch, the nation's largest single-source supplier of free-range, all-natural, grass-fed, and grass-finished beef. For more information, visit HearstRanch.com. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit HeritageRadioNetwork.org for thousands more.
This is Severin. This is Greenhorns Radio coming to you from Hudson, New York today. It's a very beautiful day. We have, like, the perfect spring weather. We have had winter and fall and the middle of summer, but now finally we have just very seasonal weather. And I'm here on the phone with Pilar Reber from Richmond, California. Hello, Pilar.
Hey, Severin.
How is it going with your season?
We finally got a little June gloom, so I'm happy because it's been a hot spring.
Hot spring. So let's talk about your operation and what you're doing there.
Okay.
And what's going on.
I've got 7 acres, and we are in urban North Richmond, California, and it's about 10 minutes north of Berkeley, California. And we do a seedling operation where we grow seedlings certified organic, and we sell them to wholesale garden centers and grocery stores, and we do a couple of farmers markets. And then our newest venture has been aquaculture. We've been doing about a 5,000 square foot aquaponic system, and we stay busy.
So let's talk about your aquaculture, because it's not what most people might think of, like three tanks and, you know, some fish. It's quite elaborate, and you have put a lot of interesting technology to work. Would you mind explaining how that happens?
Yeah, so aquaponics is we grow fish, and the fish produce effluent ammonia, and they exhale it, and they also poop ammonia, and we convert that ammonia into bacteria using just natural occurring bacteria. It's the same bacteria that's in a worm's gut, but we use that bacteria to convert that into nitrogen, and then we pump this water constantly throughout the fish pond and also into the hydroponic lettuce wrap system.
So what drove you to want to get involved in aquaponics in the first place?
We wanted to do hydroponic, and then we were looking at aeroponic, and then my friend Brewster, who runs the Internet Archive, in San Francisco, he said something about aquaponics, and I started looking into it and just fell in love with the idea, and then we went and studied it at the University of Virgin Islands in the Virgin Islands, and we learned how to raise the fish and breed the fish, and also to take care of the lettuce plants that are coming off the fish water.
Hello, hello.
Hey, yeah.
Oh, good. So,
okay.
I feel weird, but this is funny technology. But anyway, and so have people come and spoken to you about what you've been doing? Are people excited? I mean, I know that every time I come to a city, everyone is just, like, up and down about vertical farming and hydroponic and aquaponic and, like, let's make our let's make our skyscrapers edible, utopia,
right.
Ecology. And as a greenhouse grower, I feel like you might have a nice perspective on the soil and, you know, when you have lots of gizmos and gadgets running plants and life in a cycle, what impact has that got on what's grown, and what does it mean for the farmers?
So the cool thing about aquaponics is you're actually building an ecosystem. You're not just trying to run water through pipes. You're actually building up an ecosystem, and that once that's mature, the aquaponics just easy. But when we first did it, it was fail, and we kept having to replant. And, we would do things like the filter would get turned off on the pump, and or the end cap would get left off of the pump, and we'd come in and find just nothing but eviscerated fish because of our pump. We didn't replace the cap. So, when you're starting to put pumps and farming and stuff like that, you're asking for, some sort of failure, I think. But with aquaculture, you build up an ecosystem, and then it becomes balanced. And, 20 years of commercial growing for greenhouse operations and commercial farming, the aquaponics system has taught me more about Mother Nature and allowing Mother Nature to mature and the system to mature than anything I've ever learned before. And I do feel like it's the future of urban ag. I was a little skeptical about everyone talking about vertical farming and aquaponics. But you could do a higher density in aquaculture, and you're also using 90% less water. So, that's a win-win right there. And you can do it anywhere. You can build the system to whatever your space is, whether it's vertical, whether it's a gravel bed or a greenhouse or a field. You can build your own system to fit your niche area.
And so let's talk about your niche area of the world. Now, anybody who's watched my documentary film may be remembering the scene where we come past the refineries and the warehouses and the recycling depots and the miles and miles of nothing, or empty space,
yeah.
I should say. Potentially
empty nothing,
space.
Yeah. Right.
Let's talk about your part of the world there and what's happening, what could happen, what it would take to make that, which could happen, who's coming to do the work.
So we're in the Bay Area, but we have a ton of open space. We have over 500 acres of open space just in my area of Richmond. And it was, I guess, in the 70s, they zoned it heavy industrial and wanted to make industrial parks. And, the industrial parks just never showed up. And so that land has pretty much just been vacant since then. And it's been in agriculture. The history is agriculture there. It was lettuce and cabbage fields in the 1900s. And then in the 1930s, the greenhouses were built for cut roses. And it was one of the biggest cut roses parts of the world. And then they went out of business around 89 when NAFTA went through. And it was part NAFTA, the free trade agreement, but it was also part inefficient. They were heating these greenhouses with big tankers of oil and bunker fuel, and they just couldn't compete when NAFTA opened up trade. But it's an amazing climate. We're sunny and breezy. We're really coastal, but we're inland enough to not be too foggy. It's a pretty ideal growing situation. People like to think Salinas is a salad bowl, but Richmond is a much better climate than even Salinas.
And so let's talk about the operation that you're running. I feel like for a lot of people who are trying to work this dynamic of living in a city and also be involved in farming but have, enough cash flow to afford to live in a city, commercial farming can be a challenge, but by being a nurserywoman, your business seems to be like really great strategically in terms of food system repair, but also as a livelihood. Maybe you could talk about how the business started and how it grew and what counsel you might give to other people living in other cities where growing food starts might be a good idea.
Oh, yeah. So I started Sunnyside in 2004, and I had always worked in greenhouse operations right out of high school, and I always wanted to be a farmer. And it just seemed like I needed to combine what I know, which is greenhouses and container growing and growing food. And it was, kind of an aha moment when I was like, hey, I can do what I know how to do, but I can still grow food. It's also kind of a path of least resistance as far as being certified organic. I mix my own soil and we grow in containers, so I can be certified organic. You know, it only took me a month to be certified. So that was a really low barrier to becoming a certified organic grower. And then the availability of greenhouses in this particular area, there was a lot of abandoned greenhouse structures from, as old as World War II era. And so there was a lot of greenhouse space available. You know, the rent was really low because these places had basically been abandoned since NAFTA. So there was really low entry, and it was awesome that, you know, I could deliver my products so close to where they were actually being sold to. And so that was ideal. You know, I think that chefs in San Francisco used to say, hey, we want organic salads at our restaurants. Well, you know, now you go everywhere and there's organic lettuce, and now they're saying, you know, we don't care about organic as much. We care about local and biodynamic. And so I think that's a lot of opportunity right there for urban farmers and growers. We've been able to expand it.
Can you talk about how quickly you were able to grow your business and how people can expect to be able to scale up?
Yeah, so when I started it 9 years ago, and we scaled up pretty quickly, and then we doubled our size within... within 3 years, we doubled our size. And, you know, you got to grow slow. I think, we had this huge growth, and then we anticipated even more growth, and I overgrew. I grew too fast, and that really hurt my business. I took a big hit realizing, you know, overproduction is going to hurt you a lot more than underproduction. And, I learned that lesson probably year three. And then I actually scaled back down, and that was a great thing because then I was able to, you didn't overproduce. And then 2 years ago, we took over 7 acres, and so we took on some growth and a lot of infrastructure costs to doing that, so trying to rehab an old structure that had been abandoned since '89. And so we're still, we went into some debt doing that. But we're paying it down, and I'm your typical debt and maintenance American. You know, that's what I do for a living, is I pay my debt. I think a lot of us are in that boat.
Well, let's talk about the vision. I mean, 7 acres, sometimes, we have this feeling like, 3 acres, 7 acres, well, you're not a real farmer until you have 100 acres or whatever. 7 acres of glass greenhouse, let's just talk about what kind of output you could get out of something like that kind of facility.
Well, it kind of depends. If we're going to do a 10,000 square foot aquaponics system, we're going to do it would harvest that 10,000 square foot system would harvest about 3,000 to 4,000 heads a week. So that means we plant 3,000, we harvest 3,000. There's real money on the table when you look at growing, organic lettuce in that. 3,000 heads a week. It's real money there.
And is that what you're moving to do, is aquaponics in the whole system?
I do think we're going to start scaling down on our seedlings and scaling up on the aquaponics. We're also going to start farming the field. We can't really get to our fields right now because 40 years ago they covered our fields in, I call it Hellamega gravel. It's cubic acre foot of gravel over 2.5 acres. And it's deep enough that we can't really get at it with our tractor. It's more of an excavation. So we're scaling up on the aquaponics until we can really remove gravel and actually tractor farm some of the property.
We talked about the vacancy that's all around you, and we talked about, what caused that vacancy, but we didn't talk about the potential yet of that open space right next to BART for other urban ag entrepreneurs.
Well, there's so much ag history. Yeah, so you see a lot of the past when you come out to this area because you see the old greenhouses, you see the bulldozed gravel where they've torn down greenhouses, and it's easy to see the past. But it's what you have to see is the future, and the future is gravel off the field. It's green, cover crops. And I think it's, you know, we want to do soldier flies. We want to do more composting. And we work really closely with the food kitchen, and we grow a lot of food for them at our on our garden. And they get a lot of food donated from, like, Safeway that they end up having to just compost and because they get shipped to them, you know, moldy. And they throw it away, and then they have this huge trash bill. And we're trying to figure out how to take that stream, their trash stream, their kitchen waste, and put it into composting and soldier flies. And I think with what we've really learned from farming is you can't just do one thing. You have to kind of do everything. And to be able to close the loop.
Everything at once, only fail at one thing at a time.
I think we look at it as trying to close the loop, and being able to close the loop by taking the kitchen waste from the food kitchen, you know, that's a lot of chickens. It's probably pigs. It's soldier flies. It's worms. It's a lot of components just to take away that kitchen waste.
Okay, so two things. Let's talk about what are soldier flies, and number two, let's talk about the jobs training program that's there and what kind of green job can happen in a place like Richmond.
Yeah, so the soldier flies, I think I recommend YouTubing black soldier flies. They can eat a Big Mac combo meal with a large Coca-Cola, including the Coca-Cola, in 5 hours. They eat a lot. They can eat slop, where worms need more cellulose and more, you know, you can't give them slop. Soldier flies convert that into, they're basically large maggots. And as the soldier fly matures into a fly, they climb up these tubes that you put into their colonies, and then they drop down into a nice, clean 5-gallon bucket. So they harvest themselves. And then from that, we can feed the soldier flies to our fish, to our chickens. You name it. We can process them if we want to make pelletized fish food. We can, grind them up. The only downside is you have to keep them heated. They have to maintain about a 70-degree colony in the winter. So the production slows way down with soldier flies in the winter. But we're getting real excited about growing some of those. And then job opportunities.
And just to make it really explicit, I mean, soldier flies are a really efficient eater of something that nobody else can eat, and then they produce super high-quality protein that can replace soybean ration and expensive corn feed for poultry and also for... Wait a minute, there was another thing that eats soldier flies. Oh, yeah, fish.
Oh, fish, right, fish. And that was our main thing, is we wanted it for fish to grow our own fish food, because that's the one component that we buy our fish food. We just buy commercial fish food and feed our fish. And we also feed the heck out of the fish, because we want those fish to produce lots of ammonia and effluent for us. So we go through a lot of fish food. So if that's it's a lot of the fish food's coming in from Thailand and China, and if we could grow our own fish food, you know, that's a win-win right there. Plus, it's taking away the kitchen waste from the rescue mission. The organic farmers have to think about closing that loop more than, I think, you know, rural farmers.
Well, and urban farmers are faced with a paved surface around them that doesn't absorb excesses the way, lower density humans. It's easier to process waste in an ecosystem context, whereas in the city,
exactly,
the ecosystem context become mechanized, centralized, and, you know, hopefully are controlled by a municipality that's accountable and not, you know, a mega global corporation. But that's
right.
Our job to make sure that's true. There's a wonderful woman I met out at Cornell. Well, I guess it was not at Cornell. It was at... Groundswell, which is in Ithaca near Cornell, at the Farmhouse event there, and she was doing a lot of research on black soldier flies, and she posted it on FarmHack. So I want to make sure.
Oh, well, check it out.
and to you know, consider collaborating with her or documenting what you're learning up on FarmHack, because obviously documentation is the slow suit for open source.
This is true.
And I've been trying to nudge you guys into documentation for a while, so now I'm going to do it really publicly.
I know. Farmers and documentation. Programmers, too.
So what's going on? What's going on in the next, you know, few months? How could people who are interested to tune in to the urban farming scene in Richmond try to orient themselves, other than coming on a tour or something? What's going on?
Oh, well, come out and help us. Any Wednesday between 8:30 and noon, you can come out and help us. We'll give you a tour. You can help us work on our garden for the rescue mission. And we can give you a few plants usually too to take home for your own garden. And we donate a lot of. We call it the Over the Hill Club. And if you're a school or nonprofit, you can come in monthly and get plants off of our donation table. And so we support probably 30 school gardens in the Bay Area, at least. And then we also work with, you know, we're really close to the city dump. And there's a tax that if you go to the dump and dump things, you pay a tax that goes into North Richmond summer employment programs. So this tax pays high school kids in Richmond to go around and work at different businesses and get paid. And so starting on the 12th, we are going to get 10 high school kids, and they're going to come out and help us push the farm forward, and we couldn't be more excited, because every day they're there, they push us forward 3 or 4 months ahead. So we're super excited that our community really embraces green businesses and helps us out in this way. And it gives summer kids a paycheck.
Well, this is the time to figure out the green jobs, and I, of course, want to make sure that we mention that Pilar and I are scheming for some kind of Seed Circus celebration over there, multi-platform education celebration. We haven't set our date yet, but we're working on it.
Okay. Yeah, Seed Circus. I think we're staying October 27th, but it might change. And we invite everybody to come out and visit it.
We'll see how we do. any other news or upcoming events you want to make sure to tell people about? Or I was thinking maybe help people get connected to OBUGS.
Yes, OBUGS is an after-school program in West Oakland that we work really closely with. They do have volunteer days. I can't remember when their days are. Also, our neighbors, Urban Tilth in Richmond, they have volunteer days. And our city of Richmond has a greenway that runs through almost the entire city. And we are working to turn that into edible forest, and just anybody can come out on the greenway and pick food. We work really closely with that, the Greenway Progress, and we invite everybody to come to our city and see how green it is to be in Richmond.
So Richmond is rising. Pilar is there. You can find her at Sunnyside Organics. I want to make sure that I add a little tiny announcement for our Greenhorns Midsummer Solstice Mixer at the Grange Hall in Keysville, New York, which is on June 22nd and 23rd with farm tours, spoken word, a presentation by Eric Andrews of the Vermont Sales Project. Also, continuous activities throughout the day, including naturalism and a tour of the Underground Railroad Museum. So if you're not already on our events mailing list, blah, 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 please get on it. And if you haven't already heard about our new Farmer's Almanac, please order one, because they're almost a third of them are left. And we'd like to sell them all, because we need to have operating cash all the time. So I think I'll leave it there. And I thank you so much, Pilar.
Thanks, Severin.
Thank you. Bye, everyone.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at Heritage_Radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.